While this story is based on true events, certain incidents, characters, timelines, dialogue, and names have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes. Wichita, Kansas, 1977. For 3 years, the BTK killer has terrorized the citizens of Wichita. 6 men, women, and children were found murdered in their homes, seemingly at random. And with very little evidence, the police are still no closer to solving the case. Johnson Production Group presents The Killer Inside, The Ruth Finley Story. A black Mustang pulls up in front of a home where a young boy plays outside. A man steps out of the vehicle, wearing a wide-brimmed hat and carrying a leather bag. He stops, watching the boy. Inside the house, a woman prepares sandwiches. A gold locket hangs around her neck.
Steve, lunch is ready!
The little boy looks up and runs inside the house. Once little Steve is out of sight, the man approaches the home. As Steve's mother places the sandwiches on the dining room table, the man knocks at the door. Steve opens it.
Hi, I'm a detective and I need to talk to your mom. Is she home?
She's in the kitchen.
The man enters the house, setting his bag down on the floor. He peers around the corner, seeing Steve's mother head into the kitchen.
I need to speak with your mom alone. It'll take just a couple of minutes, okay?
Okay.
The man takes Steve by the shoulders and guides him toward the bathroom, nudging him inside and closing the door. The man returns to his bag in the hallway and pulls out a coil of thick rope. He grips the rope in gloved hands and creeps silently into the kitchen, where Steve's mother stands at the counter, unaware. He flings the rope around her neck and pulls it tight. She reaches for a kitchen knife and slashes at her attacker, but misses as she is wrestled to the ground. Her lifeless body is dragged from the kitchen while Steve rattles the locked bathroom door. A woman, her husband, and mother watch the news.
The BTK killer has struck again in his months-long reign of terror. His attack on Shirley Vian marks his 7th murder. Local police still have no suspects. It is said that the only clue the serial killer left is another of his signature poems. This recent string of murders has struck fear into the Wichita community. Many are installing alarm systems, and gun sales have also gone up in recent months.
The man switches off the TV.
Hey, I was watching that.
I think we might need a break from the news.
No, I do. I don't know how you watch it every night, Ruthie. It would give me nightmares. You're lucky we raised you on a farm. Friends with all our neighbors. But Wichita's different.
We don't watch the news every night. It's good to have the information, especially now.
No, but you have been following this case pretty close.
Not that close.
My guess is you know more than the cops at this point.
Ed Finley, you get your hands off that pot. Well, maybe the cops need my help, seeing as they haven't gotten any leads yet.
Oh, that's just what we need. Detective Finley.
Can you imagine?
But seriously, we shouldn't just ignore what's going on. But some of us deal with it by sticking our heads in the sand, and some of us do the opposite.
What does that mean?
Don't get me wrong. I mean, we are talking about a serial killer here in Wichita. So if you were a little scared, it'd be understandable. And I'm not trying to come down on you or anything. But, hon, sometimes you're a little more emotional than you think.
Well, if you don't want to see me get emotional now, you better hurry up and set that table.
Yes, ma'am.
Later, Ruth and Ed brush their teeth.
What do you think about us doing something a little different for our vacation this year?
Different? Like what?
I was thinking we could take that trip to London that we always talked about.
We always go to the lake. I mean, we look forward to it all year. I thought you loved the lake. We have lots of good memories from there. What would I tell my mom? She looks forward to it, too.
To be honest, I thought you might be excited to get a little space from her.
Why would you say that? I love my mom. She just gets under my skin sometimes, you know that.
I know. But also, we haven't taken a vacation, just us, in a long time. And we have money saved. Why not treat ourselves? If not now, when?
Hmm.
Inside an office, Ruth's coworker Susan paces.
You don't know if you want to go to Europe? I don't understand. I mean, at the very least, it'll take your mind off of all this scary stuff that's happening here in Murderville. Oh, and by the way, I just got myself some mace, and you should too.
Where did you find something like that?
Oh, they're carrying it in grocery stores now. I'm telling you, it's like this town has changed overnight. But in any case, you need to take a trip. You need to spice it up.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just, I don't know. You used to have hobbies. You used to do pottery, for crying out loud. But you and Ed are like clockwork lately, in bed by 10. I mean, your big news last week was that Ed got a different brand of popcorn for your Friday night movie.
It was very good popcorn.
Well, Kevin and I try to go to a new restaurant every week.
Kevin?
My new boyfriend.
Right.
I told you.
Of course, yes. It's hard to keep up with your love life sometimes.
That's fair. Oh, but seriously, I think he's the one. No, so you might be seeing less of me, but I think we're becoming one of those annoying couples, you know, with the inside jokes and the pet names.
It's really exciting.
Yeah. But anyway, all this to say, you and Ed need to shake it up.
Well, I'm happy for you. I really am. But you're in the honeymoon phase. Ed and I have been together for years. Things are fun and exciting now, but someday you might want it to feel more reliable. It's comforting, which is why I don't mind that Ed isn't some new guy taking my breath away.
Yeah, but maybe he wants to be that new guy again. You all just need to find that spark.
Oh, we change it up sometimes. If we're so predictable, what are we doing tomorrow?
That's easy. It's Saturday. So you'll garden in the morning, and then around 11:30, you'll make turkey sandwiches for lunch.
Ruth and Ed are gardening in their yard.
Eva, ready for lunch? I'm starving.
Sure.
Ruth glances at her watch.
Anything in particular sound good?
No. Turkey sandwich sounds pretty great right about now.
You know, I actually also bought ham this week.
Oh, ham. Really? Ham sandwich is really good, too.
It does. I'll be back in a minute.
Ruth heads toward the house, then turns back.
Ed, if we did take that trip, you definitely want to go to London.
Spring is supposed to be a great time to go. They say it's not as crowded, and the whole city is in bloom by March.
Sounds heavenly. You know, I have also dreamed of going to Paris. Susan says that the museums there, they have these art-themed spring shows. And strawberries are in season by then.
Ed takes her hand and begins to dance.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom.
Well, we'd be going in March.
Well, it's close enough.
Okay. I'll think about it. No promises.
I know. But you have to admit, it would be nice.
Ruth prepares sandwiches in the kitchen. Through the window, she sees Ed collapse to the ground outside.
Ruth!
Ed! Ed! Oh! Oh, Ed! Ed! Honey! Honey!
She rushes to his side. Ruth sits on the edge of Ed's hospital bed, holding his hand. A nurse leaves the room.
It's good we got here so quickly. I think we're out of the danger zone.
I don't understand. You're so young and healthy. What could have caused this?
They're going to run some more tests. We'll know more tomorrow. But they want me to stay overnight.
Oh. I'm going to have to ask that nurse for another blanket and pillow.
Why?
Because I'm going to stay here.
Honey, I appreciate that, but you and I both know there's nowhere for you to sleep here.
Ruth sits in a wooden chair.
Sure there is.
No, you won't get any sleep in that thing.
I'm not leaving you here by yourself.
Sweetheart, it's okay. Go home, you'll sleep better there. And the doctor said he'll call you as soon as they have more information. I'll be fine, I promise. I'll be home before you know it.
Back at home, Ruth enters through the front door and locks it securely behind her. She brings a phone to her sofa and sits down to make a phone call.
Hello?
Hey, Susan, it's me.
Ruth? Is everything okay?
No. No, it's not. Ed just had a heart attack.
What? Is he all right?
He's stable now, but he has to stay at the hospital overnight. It's probably going to be a bit of a recovery. So I was wondering if you could let everyone at work know that I'm going to need some time off.
Yeah, of course. Don't worry about that. How are you holding up?
It was definitely a shock. I mean, it was pretty scary for a minute. We could have lost him. But he did well in the surgery, and the doctor thinks he should be fine.
Are you at the hospital?
No, I'm home.
I wanted to stay, but Ed insisted.
You're there by yourself? I don't think that's a good idea. Especially right now. I don't think it's safe.
Why don't you stay with me?
No, I couldn't. I appreciate it, but I don't want to be a burden. Really, I'll be fine.
Okay. But make sure your doors are locked, okay?
And you call me tomorrow.
I will. Thanks, Sue.
Ruth hangs up the phone. She gets up and walks over to a sliding glass door, checking it to make sure it's locked. Later, Ruth sighs deeply in a bubble bath. She wipes bubbles away from her thigh, revealing a large triangular-shaped scar. In bed, Ruth tosses and turns restlessly.
Finley residence? Hello? Who is this?
Ruth? Is this Ruth Finley of Fort Scott, Kansas?
Who is this?
A friend. A friend who knows about that night. You remember that night, don't you? It was raining. I believe you were just 16. You came home and thought you were alone, but you weren't, were you?
Who is this?
He tied you up.
Flashback, young Ruth bound and gagged.
You remember the rest, of course. He burned you with an iron, right?
A man in a red bandana approaches young Ruth with a hot iron. In the present, Ruth grips her bedsheets.
Who is this?
Of course you remember. How could you forget? Do you still have the brand you got that night? I'd love to see it.
Ruth slams the phone receiver down, her hands trembling. The next morning, Ruth leans on the kitchen counter and pours a cup of coffee, exhausted. Someone unlocks the front door and enters the house. Gripping her cup of coffee, Ruth warily makes her way to the dining room to look around the corner. Her mother, Faye, appears from the foyer.
Morning, sunshine. I brought danishes.
Mom, what are you doing? It's so early. I asked you to call first.
Well, I thought you might need breakfast and company. Did you get any sleep? You look tired.
No, I didn't. Actually, something else happened last night.
Do you have any platters? I can never find anything in here.
It's in the bottom right. I got this strange call.
This one's chipped on the corner.
If you're fine with it.
What were you saying? The doctor called.
Distracted, Faye places danishes on a plate.
Yeah, the doctor, Dr. Becker, did call. Ed can come home today, so I need to pick him up. I should shower and get ready.
First things first, you need to eat.
Ruth covers her face with her hand and begins to cry.
Ruth. Come on, you're all right.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to handle this. It just came out of the blue, new. And he nearly died.
Let's not make mountains out of molehills. This is a trying time, but things could be worse. Ed's going to be fine. So,
you need to pull yourself together and be strong now. Because this isn't about you. It's about Ed.
Right. Right. I'm just tired.
That's my girl.
Ruth guides Ed into the house through the front door.
Now, I don't want you to worry about anything. Trust me, I have thought of everything.
Well, I don't doubt that.
I want you to come sit over here. Right there.
Ed eases onto the sofa.
The doctor told me how to make heart-healthy meals. That's what he called it. So, I made you tuna sandwich and a salad.
She places the meal on a TV tray in front of Ed.
Wow, look at all this. Mm. You didn't have to do this, sweetheart. I mean, I appreciate it, but I know this is a lot for you, too.
Don't you worry about me. I just want you to get better as quickly as possible. And I also put the little TV in the bedroom.
TV in the bedroom. Who are you and what have you done with my wife?
I just want you to relax.
She sits next to him.
I will take care of everything. If you need anything, you let me know.
Actually, there is one thing.
What's that?
Ed reaches his arms around Ruth and pulls her close.
No.
It's good to be home.
It's so good to have you home.
Outside, Ruth carries letters to the mailbox. She pulls out the mail from inside and flips through the envelopes. She stops at the sight of a letter addressed to her, written in scrawled block letters. She frantically looks up and down the street before ripping open the envelope. Inside, a newspaper clipping headline reads, "Sex maniac uses flat irons in branding local HS girl." A hand taps Ruth on the shoulder.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
Oh, it's okay.
Just forgot to give you a bill to mail.
Oh.
What's wrong?
Nothing. No, you just startled me as all.
Sure?
Let's get you back in the house.
Ruth guides Ed back inside. At the office, Susan pours a cup of coffee as Ruth enters the break room carrying a basket of muffins.
Ruth Finley, no, you didn't. Muffins.
I did.
Oh, welcome back. We should be making you muffins, not the other way around.
Oh, it's no problem to just double the recipe.
Oh, my God.
How's Ed doing? I was surprised you decided to come back so quickly.
He's fine. He's still taking his medication, but everything is basically back to normal.
It's only been a couple weeks. Surely everything isn't back to normal just yet.
It is fast. But he's healing so quickly. And he has to stay home from work, so he's going a little stir crazy.
What about you?
Me? What do you mean?
You've been through a lot lately.
Yeah. It has been a lot.
Of course it has. Ruth, your husband had a major health scare. It's okay if you're not holding it all together. I know you. You bake when you're anxious.
Oh. Actually, there is something.
Shh.
Is that yours? Get it if you need to.
No, it's just it might be Mr. Johnson.
Oh, go ahead. I don't want you to get in trouble.
He won't care. It's fine. See? I'll just call him back.
Really? I'm okay.
Ruth hurries to her desk.
Ruth, it's important to talk about this stuff.
Susan leans on Ruth's desk.
If you're struggling, I'm here.
I appreciate that. I do. But honestly, I'm glad to be back at work. Because it can help me take my mind off of everything. So I'd rather not talk about it, if that's okay.
Of course.
Later, a mail clerk places a stack of envelopes on Ruth's desk. She picks up the stack and begins to sort through it. One of the letters causes Ruth to turn pale. She opens it, and inside, a note reads, "Wherever you go, wherever you land, know that I'll never forget your brand." It is scrawled in the same writing as the envelope containing the newspaper clipping. Ruth quickly folds up the note and tucks it in her desk drawer.
What's up? Something wrong?
No. Everything's good. Hey, do you want to get an early lunch? I'm starving.
Oh, God, you know I'd love to, but Mr. Johnson just gave me a ton of filing to do.
It's no problem. I'm going to get some fresh air, okay?
Ruth grabs her purse and hurries out of the office. She walks along the street, looking at dresses displayed on mannequins in a store window. A man appears behind her, leaning against the wall.
Tough day, huh? You should take the rest of the day off. Have I seen you over at Southwestern Bell before? You like those dresses? I just want some money in Vegas. Would you like to wear one of those dresses to Vegas sometime?
I'm sorry, I'm late for meeting my husband.
I've seen you before, you know.
He grabs her wrist.
Some people's nightmares are other people's fantasies.
Let go of me!
She strikes him with her purse and runs.
Get back here, you stupid bitch!
I really didn't want to burden anyone with this, especially you, honey, with your heart. Mm-hmm. But after what happened, I mean, when that man grabbed me, I thought he was going to hit me or I don't know what.
Have a seat, Mrs. Finley.
Ruth sits across from Lieutenant Bernie Drawatsky.
Sounds like you were lucky. It could have been a lot worse. When did you say that you received these letters?
Over the last couple of weeks.
I don't want to alarm you, but I do want to be straight with you. I am concerned.
You think you know who might be doing this?
It's too early to tell. But I'm afraid whoever is doing this has some similarities to the BTK killer.
What makes you think that?
BTK also sent letters to his victims. And he has the same kind of obsessive nature that I'm seeing in Ruth's stalker. Even the messy handwriting is similar. Now, it could be two unrelated cases. A copycat, for example. But if this is the BTK, we have to take it seriously.
What should we do?
First, tell me about the man who attacked you.
He was in his 30s. He had dark hair. He was wearing jeans and a black leather jacket.
Any ideas who might be doing this? Or have any reason to be doing this? Angry neighbors, coworkers?
No, not at all.
Let's go back to the letters and the phone calls. Now, they seem to be referencing an attack on you when you were younger. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, of course. I was a teenager, and I was living in my first apartment. I'd been out shopping that day, and when I came home, a man followed me in. He tied me up, and...
Ed rubs her shoulder.
It's okay. Take your time.
He tied me up, and he burned me with a knife. I don't remember much after that. I must have blacked out. When I woke up, I was on the ground, and he was gone.
I am so sorry that happened to you. Really, I am.
Me too.
Does anyone else know about this?
Well, it happened in Fort Scott, where I grew up, and it's a small town, so that was pretty big news. But I doubt that anyone outside of town would have heard about it. Maybe it could be someone from back then.
What do you remember about the man who assaulted you in the past?
In the late 20s. I never really got a good look at his face. He was
wrapped in a scarf.
Did the police track down any suspects?
Nothing that ever led anywhere. My friends and I, we used to think that it was this man who lived near the school. But the cops cleared him. We never went near him again anyway. He was creepy. His name was David Oakes.
Thank you.
The BTK killer in his wide-brimmed hat descends into a dark basement. He pulls out Shirley Vian's golden locket and gently places it in a wooden drawer along with other trinkets and trophies. He picks up a pen and begins scrawling a note onto paper in messy block letters. At home, Ruth looks up from vacuuming as Ed enters the house.
Is that the mail?
Ed looks at Ruth grimly. She reaches out her hand.
Let me see it.
Ed hands over the envelope, and Ruth rips it open with trembling hands. The familiar messy block letters are written on the page. It reads, "Screw you. Screw the police. I'm watching you. Stay away from the cops, or else."
He knows we went to the police. It's like he's tracking my every move. What are we gonna do?
We just have to take him one day at a time. But no matter what, I'm gonna keep you safe. We'll figure this out together.
Ed and Ruth embrace. Back in the dark basement, the BTK killer pulls a coil of thick rope from a wall and places it in a leather bag. Ruth answers a call at work.
Southwestern Bell, Ruth Finley. Hello?
Ruth.
Ruth is now alone in the office.
Southwestern Bell.
I thought you'd be excited to hear from me.
Flashback to a man in a red bandana.
You look great in blue, by the way.
Ruth's eyes dart to the window. Flashback to young Ruth, bound and gagged. She slams down the phone, then leaves the receiver off the hook. Ruth makes a call to the police while Sue listens intently.
Okay, I'll let you know if anything else comes up. Thanks, Lieutenant. He's such a nice man. Always so reassuring. He's gonna call and check in later.
Does he think it's that guy? From your hometown? David something?
David Oakes. No, they cleared him yesterday. Apparently he has an alibi for when I was attacked. So they're kind of back to square one. I don't know what I'm gonna do. They say that it could actually be the BTK killer.
No.
And I want to lean on Ed, but I don't want to worry him.
It's okay. We're going to figure this out. But obviously, I don't think it's good for you to stay here.
Yeah.
Can Ed come and pick you up?
No, I can drive.
No. Well, do you want to go to my house?
No, it's okay. I think I should just head home.
Well, do you think that's a good idea? What if he follows you? Hey, I can go with you.
No. Ed is at home, and I'll be safe there.
Okay, but I'm walking you to your car. And frankly, I don't want to be here either. And Ruth, you better go straight home, you hear me? And if anything strange happens, you call the cops, okay?
I promise.
Ruth parks her car in front of a grocery store, carefully surveying her surroundings before heading inside. A man holding a shopping basket looks at Ruth and smiles. She looks away nervously and heads down another aisle. The man follows, placing items in his basket. Ruth glances over her shoulder and the man smiles again. She continues along the aisle, stopping at a display of pepper spray for self-defense. She grabs a bottle and hurries to the checkout. The cashier takes the bottle of pepper spray.
Can't be too careful these days.
Ruth hands some money to the cashier and looks back over her shoulder. The man smiles yet again.
Keep the change.
Ruth rushes out of the store while a mysterious figure watches from a vehicle. Ruth quickly gets into her car and locks the doors behind her. Ruth enters the house carrying a stack of letters and flicks on the light.
Honey, I'm home.
She slowly looks through the letters. Another envelope addressed to Ruth, written in scrawled block letters. She breathes heavily and frantically looks around.
Ed, are you here?
Steadying her breath, Ruth sits on the sofa and carefully turns over the envelope in her hands.
Finley Residence?
Hi, Ruthie. Ed asked me to give you a call because he forgot to leave a note.
Tell her I said hi.
He says hi. He's here fixing that front door.
Mom, he is supposed to be recuperating from surgery and you ask him to work on your house? What is the matter with you?
You've been getting after me for weeks now to get that front door fixed ever since the lock broke. You said it wasn't safe.
I thought that you would call a handyman.
I didn't know who to call. You know how expensive these things can get.
All right, I'm glad that you're finally getting it fixed. Did he say how much longer he was gonna be?
Probably another half hour or so.
Okay, well, I'm cooking dinner, so he needs to come home. He needs to come home right now, but I'm making chicken and mashed potatoes. It's probably too much food for the two of us. Why don't you join us?
Well, thank you. That sounds lovely.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Ruth hangs up the phone and looks down at the envelope. In the darkness, the black Mustang door opens and the BTK killer steps out, making his way to the trunk of the car. He pulls out his leather bag and walks toward a house. The silhouette of his wide-brimmed hat is barely lit as he makes his way to the back of the house. He peers in a window. In her kitchen, Ruth is busily preparing dinner. She closes the oven door and slides potatoes into a pot. The BTK killer raises a pair of pliers and snips the phone lines. Ruth leaves the kitchen. The BTK killer reaches a gloved hand into his bag, taking out a screwdriver. He begins unscrewing the lock on a door. Ruth heads into her bedroom and shuts the door behind her. After successfully unlocking the door, the BTK killer silently opens it and slips inside. In her bedroom, Ruth closes her closet doors. The BTK killer grips the coil of rope and makes his way down a hallway towards a closed white door. Ruth slips on a pair of brown flats, the white door of her bedroom securely closed. The BTK killer reaches for the doorknob and opens it, revealing a woman folding clothes. He wraps the rope around her neck as she tries to fight back, slapping his arm with the palm of her hand. Meanwhile, in her own bedroom, Ruth fixes her hair in the mirror. Ruth sits in her garage at a pottery wheel, smoothing clay into a bowl shape. As a car pulls into her driveway, Ruth loses control of the clay and the top part of the bowl detaches. Lieutenant Drowatsky gets out of the car.
Oh. Not a great morning for you either.
I'm just out of practice. I saw there was another murder last night. Nancy Fox, right?
He's been busy.
Do you know anything yet?
Let's just say we're not dealing with a novice. And I know Miss Fox lived nearby, so I wanted to come and see if you saw or heard anything strange last night.
No, nothing.
Ruth takes an envelope from a shelf.
This is the latest one I told you about.
Thanks. I'll get these to the lab for prints. I wanted to show you these. These are known felons that match the description of your stalker. I wanted to see if anything rang a bell.
Drowatsky holds open a folder, and Ruth studies it.
I don't recognize anyone.
That's okay. We'll keep looking.
Do you know what you're looking for?
An idea, but nothing concrete. It's too early to tell exactly the guy we're looking for. Or guys.
Do you think it could be more than one guy?
You just have to keep an open mind. But all this to say, rest assured, we won't stop until we find him. Thank you.
He heads back to his car.
You know, I've got to say, you seem to be handling this pretty well. Most people in your shoes be falling apart.
I don't have that luxury. Ed's still not 100%. And women are a lot stronger than people give us credit for.
Well, that's definitely true.
How are you doing? Don't take any offense, but you look exhausted.
Well, like I said, it hasn't been a great morning.
Just because of work? I'd love to hear about someone else's problems for once.
My wife and I got into a fight. She had a doctor's appointment, and I was supposed to take our son to school, but it came in early and I forgot.
Oh, I'm sure she understands.
She does. But it's been months of this. I get 100 tips about the BTK killer case every day. I don't remember the last time I had dinner with my family, let alone date night with my wife.
You should have dinner with us. You and your wife, I mean.
You want to have us over for dinner?
Every marriage needs a night off. Get a babysitter. It'll be the kind of relaxing evening you'll need. And it'll be a night of normalcy for all of us.
Well, sounds nice.
Ruth waves goodbye. Later, Drowatsky and his wife Dora join Ed and Ruth at the dinner table.
Who wants more wine?
Oh, I'd love some, Ruth. Thank you. It's delicious.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Ed and I discovered this at a little adorable shop in Kansas City. It's called Pinot Noir.
I've had enough of you. Thanks. Well, so, Lieutenant, I wanted to check in with you about a couple things.
Oh, please call him Bernie.
Bernie, I saw the news this morning, and they made it sound like you still don't have any leads on the BTK case.
Ed, we promised no shop talk tonight.
No, it's all right. You can't believe everything the media says.
Oh, so you have found something?
Well, I'm not supposed to talk about an open investigation, but just keep your back door locked.
Is that how he breaks in?
Cuts the phone lines. Just be careful.
It's terrifying.
What about Ruth's case? Any news?
Ruth hits Ed's shoulder.
Nothing concrete. But don't worry, I've got a whole team working on it.
So there are others looking into it?
Tonight, you mean?
Sure, I mean, aren't you worried that something could happen, you know, while we're here?
Bernie looks over to Dora.
I understand your concern. I do. But rest assured, we're working around the clock.
Okay, you two. This is Bernie's night off. Let's let him enjoy it. And speaking of that, I made something else that we can enjoy. I have a strawberry vanilla trifle chilling in the fridge.
Mm. Let me help you with that, Ruth.
Dora gets up from the table. She and Ruth carry dishes into the kitchen.
I can't believe you're doing this, by the way.
Doing what?
Well, hosting us, of course. Well, with everything that's going on.
Oh, honestly, it's helping me keep my mind off of it.
Ugh, well, it's exactly what we needed. With 5 kids at home, it's just nice to be around adults. No one's tugging your sleeve every 2 minutes, and don't get me started on Bernie's job.
Oh, he did mention that he's been pretty overwhelmed lately.
It's been awful. I mean, that kind of pressure isn't good for anyone. And he's carrying the weight of all of it on his shoulders.
But the whole force is on the BTK killer's case, right? I mean, he can't take that on by himself.
Well, easier said than done, especially for Bernie. You know, he found the original BTK letter?
The one at the library?
Dora nods.
So every murder that's happened since, he feels personally responsible for them.
Well, obviously it's not his fault.
Well, try telling him that. He sees the people of Wichita as his family and friends, so if he can't protect them, it really weighs on him.
We're lucky to have him.
Meanwhile, in the dining room.
Everything all right, Ed? I hope we're not being a burden.
Not at all. We're happy to have you all. I hope you know that.
We're happy to be here. Ruth is an amazing cook.
She is. It's just, we've been married for a long time, so I know her.
How do you mean?
Over the years, she does this kind of thing when she's anxious. Take care of other people, I mean. And I'm really concerned about her.
So you have to understand how this whole taking a night off thing is strange. I want her attacker found as soon as possible. There's only so much that I can do, so I have to put my trust in you.
I appreciate your honesty. The fact is, these things take time. We're gonna find a med. You just have to be patient.
Ruth brings in a strawberry trifle.
Okay, who wants dessert?
Love some.
In the office, Ruth pores over a newspaper. The headline reads, BTK claims his eighth victim, accompanied by a photograph of his signature scrawled note. Susan hurries into the office carrying a large box and a stack of mail.
Hey, you ready for lunch? Cafe has that delicious tortilla soup today.
Oh, shoot, I forgot today was Monday. I told Kevin I would meet him for lunch. Arrange it?
Sure, of course.
Ruth looks down at the newspaper in her hands and folds it up nervously. Outside, Ruth makes her way down the street. She is taken by surprise by her stalker.
Hey, Ruth. Did you miss me?
He strikes Ruth over the head, knocking her out cold. Ruth is dragged through an alleyway towards a black car. Ruth comes to in the back seat of a car. She looks around, trying to get her bearings. She can make out two male figures in the front seat, wearing red bandanas. The one in the passenger seat is the stalker who struck her. She winces in pain and tries to move, but her arms are bound behind her with a coil of thick rope. Out the window, there is no sign of city buildings or landmarks, only trees. Back at the office, Susan returns and notices Ruth's desk is still empty. She checks her watch and picks up the phone to make a call to Ed.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. It's Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Sorry to bother you, but I'm worried. It's Ruth.
What's wrong?
Well, she left for lunch a couple hours ago and she's not back yet.
She's more than an hour late. It's not like her at all.
I'm afraid something happened.
The black car continues down the secluded road.
Is everything prepped at the house?
Ruth's stalker nods. Ruth cranes her neck to see below the seat and notices her purse and the can of pepper spray she bought. The kidnappers drive deeper into the forest. As her stalker shifts his feet, Ruth's purse is knocked to the side and the can of pepper spray rolls closer to her. Ruth looks up and notices the backseat door has an ashtray. The lid is open. She pulls against her restraints.
I'm gonna be sick.
The driver adjusts the rearview mirror.
She's awake.
Ruth's stalker turns around to glare at her.
Oh, I think I'm gonna be sick.
We're almost there.
Ruth manages to sit up with her back against the door. She rubs her ropes against the metal ashtray lid. Meanwhile, Susan and Bernie look for Ruth at a diner.
No, she didn't come in today. I noticed because she and Sue usually come in together on Mondays.
Could she have gone somewhere else?
Well, sometimes we do some window shopping at the stores down the street. She's been looking for a new dress.
Okay, good to know. Did you see anything strange this morning? Anything out of the norm?
No, it's really been pretty quiet, to tell you the truth.
Here's my card and my direct line. Do me a favor and give me a call if you see or hear anything, okay?
Will do.
In the back seat, Ruth looks down at her can of pepper spray, just out of reach. The ropes around her wrists fray as she continues to rub them on the ashtray.
I'm going to be sick.
I'm not risking her puking in my car.
Ruth's stalker shoots her a disgusted look before turning his eyes back to the road. Ruth manages to slip one of her wrists free. The car pulls off of the road and comes to a stop in a secluded forest clearing.
Enough. We already took your coat, now we're gonna take your shoes. We're outside the city now, so no funny ideas about running away.
Oh.
Make it quick.
The men exit the vehicle. The driver opens the rear door and yanks off Ruth's shoes, tossing them into the trees. Ruth bends down and snatches the can of pepper spray, spraying the men directly in the face.
God damn it!
Ruth takes off running. Drawing guns, the men head after her.
One.
Ruth sprints through the trees, the kidnappers hot on her heels. She looks behind her and drops the can of pepper spray.
Back here! Come on! Come on, Ruth!
Ruth weaves through the trees, but stumbles and falls to the ground. She looks around frantically and scrambles on her hands and knees to hide behind a large tree. The two men lurk in the woods nearby.
Oh. Ruth. Come on. I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna play a little game.
Back at the car, a truck pulls into the forest clearing. The kidnappers look up, alarmed. A man in a plaid shirt gets out of his truck and examines the kidnappers' car. Ruth peeks out from her hiding place. The kidnappers holster their weapons.
Can't leave her. We can't risk getting caught.
Maybe she got away this time, but we're not done with her.
It's freezing out here. There's no way she makes it.
Damn it.
Howdy.
Hey, man. Sorry. We had to take a leak.
No problem. Just wanted to make sure no one was hurt or anything. No,
we're all good.
The bystander in plaid drives off in his truck, and the kidnappers get into their car. Ruth hugs her knees to her chest, waiting for her abductors to drive off. Once she is in the clear, Ruth collapses to the forest floor, sobbing. Her leg is bleeding. Ruth manages to make her way to a gas station, limping on her injured leg. A man comes out of the gas station and runs to her.
Are you okay? What happened?
Oh, please. Do you have a phone?
Yeah, sure. Eric! Help us out here.
It's okay. You're safe now.
At the police station, Ed rushes to his wife.
Thank God. I thought I might never see you again. I'm so sorry, sweetheart. I can't help but think there's something more I could have done.
No, it's not your fault. Just take a deep breath. You're hurt.
Mrs. Finley, I'm Captain Price. I wanted to introduce myself because I'll be handling your investigation from here on out.
Bernie isn't on the case.
He is, but under the circumstances, we're escalating the urgency of your investigation. So I'll be overseeing the case moving forward.
So, what happens next?
Well, first...
Captain Price pulls up a chair.
Rest assured, we're putting you under protection for the next several days. We'll have officers patrolling your neighborhood at all hours, and they'll be keeping an eye on your street specifically.
Do you think that's enough?
I do. We'll have multiple cars patrolling, so if something were to happen, you'll have several officers close by. Ruth, I'd like to ask you some questions, but first I'd like you to sit with a sketch artist. You strong enough for that?
Ruth nods weakly.
Yeah.
A sketch artist draws a face. Ruth points to the page.
I think his hair was a little darker. And his eyebrows maybe thicker.
Ed taps Bernie's shoulder and takes out a stack of letters.
What's up?
These are some letters Ruth has to see. And, I need your advice. Honestly, I'm really struggling here.
Yeah, of course you are.
No, I mean, I feel like I'm doing everything I can, but it's never enough. It's like the minute I take my eyes off of her, she's in danger.
Ed, this isn't your fault. You know that, right?
That's easy for you to say, but it feels that way. I mean, we were lucky this time, but if something were to happen, or God forbid, I could never forgive myself. Please just put yourself in my shoes. What if it were Dora?
I'll think about it.
But in the meantime, you have to promise that you're going to let yourself off the hook about this, okay?
At home, Ruth lies in bed reading a book, while Ed takes off his shirt. Ruth anxiously looks out the window.
What is it?
Oh, nothing. I thought I heard a noise. Everything is putting me on edge lately. I can't stop worrying.
He sits with her.
I know, sweetheart.
And my mother said she'd call today. Not that I really want her to, but she didn't.
I know. It's all right.
Ed rubs Ruth's shoulder. She tosses her book to the side and rests her arm on her forehead.
You okay?
I'm just thinking about all the sleep I'm not going to get tonight. I'm just not sleeping lately.
Yeah, me either.
I know they said they were going to have officers patrolling, but I just wish they would put someone outside to keep watch.
Ed sets his jaw and looks out the window.
Honey, do you think things are ever going to go back to normal?
I hope so.
Oh, me too.
Ed holds Ruth's hand to his mouth.
Well, there's one thing I know for sure.
Ed gets up.
We're not going to get back to any sense of normalcy until at least one of us gets a good night's sleep.
Ed goes to the closet and puts on a heavy jacket. He grabs a shotgun and checks to see if it's loaded.
What are you doing?
Going outside to keep watch.
Oh, honey, that's sweet, but you don't have to do that.
Yes, I do. If that's the only way my wife is going to get any sleep, then that's what I need to do.
He bends down to kiss her forehead, then makes his way out the sliding glass door to the back of the house. He turns back and raises a hand to Ruth, who gives him a little wave in return. Ruth turns out the light and pulls the covers up around her, while Ed settles into a chair outside. The BTK killer walks briskly between two houses in the cover of night, carrying his heavy bag. He rounds the corner to the back of the house and peers through the window in the back door. He sees a woman enter the home, a man close behind her.
I could always come in for a nightcap.
Well, that does sound tempting. But maybe some other time.
The couple share a kiss while the BTK killer watches. The woman inside bids the man farewell and closes the front door securely. She turns on the light and takes off her coat, hanging it up. Once she is out of view, the BTK killer gets to work on the back door's lock, jamming it with a screwdriver. The door opens and he slips inside. The following day, Ruth pulls a cake pan from the oven. A happy birthday banner is on the counter. Ed walks in from outside.
Oh, no peeking. Cake's not ready yet. Now, I am going to be gone for about a half an hour, and there better not be any bites missing when I get back.
Wait, where are you going?
I just have to run a few errands. I have been here in this house for 12 straight days.
I know, but Bernie said after the latest murder, he's worried the BTK killer could be escalating. It's too risky for you out there right now.
That was 2 weeks ago.
I know, but is there anything you can do to keep yourself busy?
I can't live like this. We can't live like this. In fear, I mean.
What is it you really want to do?
I just need to go shopping.
Okay, I'll go with you.
No, I mean, it's not that I don't want you to. I need to do this on my own.
But honey, it's not a good idea.
I'm shopping for your birthday present. I wanted it to be a surprise.
Well, could Susan go with you? Or maybe your mom?
Susan is visiting her dad out of town, and mom is doing church stuff today. Listen, I have thought this through. I can get what I need at the mall over on Central. It's 5 minutes away. It's a very public place. I will come straight home. I promise.
Ruth picks up her purse and leaves. Ed sighs, shaking his head in defeat. Ruth cautiously makes her way through the parking lot of Seven Oaks Shopping Center. It is dark and empty. She fumbles with her keys and opens the trunk of her car. placing her shopping bags inside. Suddenly, her stalker appears.
Did you think you could run away and I wouldn't find you?
Ruth turns to run, but he grabs her from behind.
Get off of me!
She jabs him hard with her elbow, and he falls to the ground. Ruth flings open her car door, but the stalker grabs her ankles.
You like that, huh?
He drags her from the driver's seat and slams her body against the side of the car. He pulls out a knife, slashing it at Ruth. Ruth manages to block his blow, but the stalker pushes her into the vehicle and stabs her in the side. Ruth kicks out with her leg, sending him staggering backwards. They both reach for the car door, but Ruth beats him to it, slamming it on his fingers. A security camera observes from a light post. Ruth speeds away in her car, leaving her stalker doubled over in the parking lot. Lying in a hospital bed, Ruth's eyes flutter open. Her mother, Ed, and Susan are at her bedside.
The doctor said you were in surgery for a few hours, so it'll be a bit of a recovery. You have to stay here for a few days so they can monitor you.
How did the surgery go? Were there any complications?
No, it sounds like it all went well, and her vitals are looking good, so they're optimistic.
That sounds like good news.
Yeah, it is. And the doctor said it could have easily gone another way. If the blade had gone even an inch deeper, it could have punctured your organs, so you were lucky.
I feel lucky. That's for sure.
How are you doing? Do you need anything?
No, I'm okay.
Well, let us know if you do. We're all here for you.
Bernie enters.
There she is. How are you holding up?
I still feel a little weak.
Have you found anything yet?
Nothing conclusive, but we're on it.
What if he shows up here?
That's what I want to know. Is she safe here?
Maybe we should move her to a different hospital.
No, I don't think that's necessary. I understand you're all going through a lot. I'm putting an officer right outside your door, and rest assured, we're going to have Ruth under 24-hour surveillance while she's recovering. We'll make absolutely sure that you're safe. Right now, you just need to focus on getting better.
Ed squeezes Ruth's hand. Back at home, Ed holds the front door open for Ruth.
Welcome home, sweetheart.
Oh, it's so good to be home. Maybe now we can celebrate your birthday properly.
As Ruth turns, Ed catches her by the waist and pulls her close.
Couldn't have asked for a better present.
That night, Ed lies sleeping soundly. In the bed next to him, Ruth stirs and sits up slowly. She looks over at Ed, making sure he is still asleep. Ruth quietly slides open a drawer and pulls out a large pair of scissors. In her other hand, she turns over a box of matches. Outside, Ruth creeps to the back of the house and snips the phone wire. Holding a bottle of lighter fluid, she walks as if in a trance to a large bush in the yard. Ruth douses the bush in lighter fluid, then gingerly removes a match from the box. She strikes it, staring into the lit flame before gently bending down. The bush catches fire, the flames growing quickly. Ruth lets the match fall to the ground, the light of the fire dancing on her face. Back inside the house, Ruth stands over Ed, still fast asleep. She then makes her way to her side of the bed and eases herself under the covers, tucking them around Ed. As the light of the fire glows through the bedroom window, Ed lifts his head.
Ruth, hun, wake up, I smell smoke. There's a fire. There's a fire. Ruth, call the fire department.
Ed rushes outside as Ruth frantically reaches for the phone.
Dead. Come out here, honey.
Oh.
Behind me. Careful, careful.
Ruth hurries to her husband's side as he sprays the burning bush with a garden hose.
Careful, honey.
Investigators search the yard while Ed and Ruth sit on the porch steps.
He's never going to stop, is he?
We're okay. We're okay now.
Captain Price and Lieutenant Drawatsky approach.
How are you folks holding up?
Well, as can be expected.
We want you to know we're doing everything we can. We put a security system on your back gate, and just to make extra sure that he's not coming back, I've assigned 3 officers to your home for round-the-clock surveillance.
The officers join them.
Is that necessary? I don't want to be a burden.
At this time, it's absolutely necessary.
And you're not a burden at all, ma'am. We're happy to help however we can. I'm John, by the way.
I'm Ruth. Thank you.
At the police station, Lieutenant Drawatsky enters Captain Price's office.
Come.
Captain, we have a problem.
This was addressed to your wife.
Drawatsky hands the captain a note with BTK's signature block letters scrawled on it.
I'll call the chief. But we need to figure this out, and we need to do it now. This has gotten way too personal.
What do we do?
We must have missed something. So we go back over everything again, and we don't stop until we find an answer.
Later, Drawatsky returns to the station.
Captain, I just got back from the parking lot where Ruth was attacked.
What'd you find?
Nothing. It doesn't make sense. Ruth said there was a struggle, but no one else's blood was found anywhere. No other fingerprints, and no knife.
And no witnesses, just like the other attack.
Right. They live on a dead-end street, and no neighbors saw anyone suspicious for months.
It's also odd that no footprints were ever found.
Especially after the fire.
We did find some footprints. Maybe the answer's been staring us right in the face the whole time.
Ed rushes into the police station.
I came as soon as I could. It sounds like you might have found a suspect.
Yeah, we'd love to discuss it with you, but we want to do so in private.
Oh, all right.
Just have a few questions. Come into my office.
Are you thinking it's me?
This way, Ed.
Ed follows Captain Price into his office.
Lieutenant Drawatsky and I have been going over the case, and some things don't add up. There were no witnesses, no footprints. But most importantly, no one outside the case knew I came on board the investigation when I did. So no one outside the case would know to send me a threatening letter. It had to be someone with intimate knowledge of the investigation. Did you think we wouldn't find out? Should have known, right? It's always the husband.
Bernie, come on. You can't believe what he's saying.
The evidence speaks for itself.
But it doesn't make any sense. How could I be Ruth's stalker? She would recognize me.
You could have hired someone.
Happens all the time.
I am innocent. I couldn't do this to my wife.
Ed, come on. Cooperating with us now is your best move here.
No. If you don't believe me, I'll prove it. I'll take a polygraph.
The arms of a polygraph machine scribble lines onto paper.
Is your name Ed Finley?
Yes.
Are you married to Ruth Finley?
Yes.
Have you been sending Ruth threatening letters?
No.
Did you abduct your wife?
No.
Did you set fire to your house?
No.
Did you hire someone to attack your wife?
Absolutely not.
Did you stab your wife, Ed?
Of course not.
Ed looks from Captain Price over to Bernie.
Of course not.
We're gonna release you.
You sound very happy about that.
Look, I'm sorry about this, okay? But you have to understand, it's complicated. Based on the evidence we have, if you're not the perpetrator, that means it can only be one person. And if we're gonna catch them, we gotta do it right away.
Great. Let's do it then.
No, you don't understand. Normally we wouldn't bring you in on this, but you might be the one person who can help us. We need you to get Ruth out of the house.
Back at home, Ed holds the front door open for Ruth.
Thought I'd take you for a nice lunch.
That would be nice.
Ed checks his surroundings warily before getting into the car with Ruth. As Ed slowly reverses out of the driveway and takes off down the street, another car pulls away from the curb a few houses down, followed by a police cruiser. Captain Price and Lieutenant Bernie Drawatsky enter the home, accompanied by two police officers.
All right, gentlemen, spread out. Search everywhere. We only have so much time.
Later, Ruth and Ed enter the police station.
Thanks for coming so quickly.
Of course. We can't wait to hear what you found out.
No, please follow us.
Ed doesn't budge.
Ed, aren't you coming?
We'd just like to talk with you first, Ruth.
It's okay, Ruth. Just go with them and I'll talk to you soon.
A cassette labeled Ruth Finley is loaded into a tape deck. It begins recording as Ruth nervously sips water.
Why'd you do it, Ruth?
I'm sorry, do what?
Is this all a joke to you? Or maybe you just wanted attention, was that it?
Bernie, what's going on? I don't know what you're talking
Ruth,
about.
Stop. That's enough.
What Lieutenant Drawatsky is getting at is... we know it's you.
Bernie opens a briefcase and pulls out bags containing notes and journals.
We found these in your home office.
Those aren't mine.
Ruth, stop.
That's not all we found. It took a while for the warrant to come through, but after your attack at the mall, we reached out for security camera footage.
Bernie reaches over and switches on a small television. On the screen, footage shows Ruth in the parking lot, swinging her arms as if fighting off an invisible attacker. Ruth stares at the screen in disbelief as she is shown pulling herself from her car and thrashing from side to side.
What is this?
The footage shows Ruth plunging a knife into her own side.
What are you insinuating? There must be some misunderstanding.
Ruth, it was never the BTK killer.
You wrote those letters. You carried out the attack on yourself.
No, I didn't.
You've humiliated us. You wasted our time and our resources. This investigation has cost this department close to $400,000. Do you have any idea how much money that is?
I didn't do anything. How can you even say that? I'm the victim here.
That's enough! Now, here's what's going to happen. You are going to stay here until you confess.
Ruth tries to speak, but the words don't come out. Bernie checks in with Ed.
How's it going in there?
Not great. She's still insisting that she's innocent. I'm afraid we could keep going in circles like this for hours.
What are you gonna do?
Well, we need a confession. And I think I may know how to get one.
Ruth paces in the interview room. Ed quietly lets himself in.
Oh, Ed, thank God.
She puts her arms around him.
You have to help me. They think that I did this. It's crazy. Sweetheart, they won't listen to me, but they might listen to you.
Hun, I know this is hard.
You have to tell them. You have to tell them that this is crazy.
I know this is hard, but this is the time that we all need to be honest. I mean, aren't you tired of all this?
I am being honest. I couldn't do this to myself. That would be insane.
Ed, you believe me, right? Ed. Ed, please.
I want to. But I don't know what to believe at this point, sweetheart.
Ruth sinks into a chair.
You don't believe me either.
Ed sits next to her.
I want to. I really do. But the evidence...
it's wrong. It has to be a mistake.
Honey, please. This has been going on for so long. They have the footage from the mall. Ruth, it's you.
I can't confess to something I didn't do. You can't expect that of me.
You're right. I can't make you do anything.
Lieutenant Drowatsky re-enters.
Well, Ruth, where do we go from here?
If what you say is true, then I must be crazy. It's the only explanation that makes sense.
Honey, do you think you need a doctor?
I'm sure I do.
Ruth is led through a mental hospital.
No! Get your hands off of me!
A screaming woman is carried away as Ruth cautiously walks into a small patient room labeled Room 106. A nurse leans in and gently closes the door. An office door reads Dr. Kenneth Mitchell. Ruth sits across from him.
How are you today, Ruth?
Fine, thanks.
Anything in particular you want to talk about today? Last time you mentioned Ed's heart attack, that must have been a shock. Do you want to talk more about that?
Ruth glances at a houseplant.
Oh, the plant. My sister told me to get one because it would make the room more inviting. But it's fake, because I know nothing about plants, I'm afraid.
I could show you how to water it. A real one. I mean,
I'd love that. You a gardener?
I grew up on a farm.
Really? What was that like? Must have been hard at times?
Sometimes. Nobody's life is perfect.
You don't like to complain, do you?
My mother says it doesn't do any good. Crying, getting upset, it's just not helpful.
It's interesting because I think crying can be a great release. What about Ed's heart attack? Did you allow yourself to cry then?
A little.
Good. Because that must have been a really scary time for you.
Well, it didn't happen to me.
No, but you almost lost him. The love of your life. I noticed Ed's heart attack happened right before you started having your symptoms, so must have had an impact.
Maybe it did.
I've been thinking. I know it's hard to talk about all this, but I also know you're a writer, so why don't you try writing about it?
Dr. Mitchell hands Ruth a notebook. She flips through its pages. Later, Ed comes down a hallway at the mental hospital to see Ruth sitting in a common area by a large window. She writes in her notebook on her lap. Ed approaches and stands in front of her.
Hi, Ruthie.
Ruth slowly looks up at Ed and gestures to an empty chair near her.
Do you want to sit?
Ed sinks slowly into the chair.
I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. I'm sorry, I just...
You just think I'm crazy, right?
I don't think you're crazy.
What do you think?
I don't know. This has all been very hard.
Is that what you came by to tell me, that this is all very hard for you?
Ruth, no. Please. The cops are considering charging you with falsely reporting a crime. Hun, this is serious. They think you did this on purpose.
Do you think I did this on purpose?
I want to believe you. I do. But it was such a long time. Sweetheart, what do you think we should do?
I think I've died and gone to hell.
Dr. Mitchell holds the notebook.
See, you've been writing in your journal. What I find interesting is that you always say you had a normal childhood, but your writing suggests otherwise. A lot of your poems have violence in them.
Ruth looks down at her hands.
Ruth, I may have some good news. I think I might know what's going on.
You do?
I think you have multiple personality disorder. It's when you repress things so much so that you dissociate. And as a result, you may form other personalities that you were never aware of. I know it's a lot, but in order to get a true diagnosis, I need more information. Your condition usually occurs after a major trauma, like an assault or abuse. Do you have any memories of anything like that?
Well, the time I was attacked when I was a teenager.
Of course, but I'm curious if anything happened earlier than that.
Well, I do have some memories.
Flashback to little Ruth playing tea party with her dolls. A man approaches from behind.
They're fuzzy.
Yeah, it's okay. It's common with your condition. What about this red bandana? Many of your poems mention one. Do you have a memory associated with it?
The man in the flashback comes into view wearing a red bandana.
There was a neighbor, a farmer who lived down the road.
Little Ruth is led into a barn.
He had this barn, and he would take me there sometimes when I was little.
I'm just gonna play a little game.
I'm scared.
It's okay, you're not in danger anymore.
I've always felt like I was above myself, like I was watching myself.
That's very common. You had to go inside your own mind. So it wasn't you going through it, but someone else.
I just feel so much guilt. Like it was all my fault.
But it's not. This man abused you. This is a breakthrough, Ruth. Don't you see? This is when you started to dissociate. And the guilt, I think that's why you created this personality. So you could punish yourself, in a way. Do you see that?
Ruth and her mother sit on a bench outside.
Well, it's good news that the police are dropping the charges.
Yeah.
Mom, did you hear what I said? Yes. I just don't know what to say. So you didn't know about the abuse? Well, I'm just in shock, is all.
Did you?
I didn't know for sure. But I had a feeling that something might be off.
but I didn't know what to do.
So you did nothing for years? If I had had suspicions that something was off, that my kids were in danger, I wouldn't have done nothing.
I made a mistake. I know that. And if I could change it, I would. But I can't. Oh, please. Is there any way you can find it in your heart to forgive me?
Mom, I can try it. I don't know.
Ruth sits in Dr. Mitchell's office.
The day I was attacked on the street, I was window shopping. It was just me.
What else?
The letters. I sent them.
What about the other attacks?
The day of the kidnapping, I wasn't taken. I drove myself. I drove out to the highway, and I called the detective from the gas station. The mall, I was just there by myself. Running from no one. Then I got the knife. And I stabbed myself. Over and over and over.
What are you seeing?
Everything.
Ruth and Ed sit in the hospital's common room.
So, for years, since I was little, I've been unconsciously repressing these emotions and feelings. And all of that fear and anger had to come out somehow.
So it came out in this, what'd you call it? Other personality?
Right. Only I wasn't aware of it. I was disassociated. And he also thinks that your recent heart attack was a trigger. The thought of losing you, I couldn't handle it. I know it's a lot. It all sounds strange, and I still have a lot of work to do. But Dr. Mitchell, he says that people's personalities can be strange, especially when they've experienced significant trauma. Ed, please, say something.
It's not just what the doctor said, but it's everything that happened to you.
I know. You should take all the time that you want if you need that.
Ed takes Ruth's hands in his.
It happened to you, not me. And it wasn't your fault. And even though it's a lot, I think it's a good thing.
You do?
Because I know now that you were telling me the truth.
You believe me?
Of course. Which means you need to stop trying to get rid of me. I'm sorry, hon, but you're stuck with me.
They hold each other. The streets of Paris are bustling and vibrant. Ed and Ruth sit at a bistro table, sipping wine.
Can you finally admit that I was right?
You were. In fact, I think we might have to make this an annual thing.
To new memories.
To new memories.
Words on screen read, the BTK killer terrorized Wichita for years, killing 10 people from 1974 to 1991 when the cases went cold. The police got a break in the case in 2005, and, with the use of DNA technology, identified Dennis Rader as the BTK killer. He is currently serving 10 life sentences. Ruth and Ed stayed married for the rest of their lives until Ed died in 2011. Ruth spent years coming to terms with her diagnosis and healing from her trauma. Her story became national news, and she was interviewed on many talk shows. Ruth passed away in 2019. RAIN is the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. Help is free and confidential. Call 800-656-4673. Cast: Ruth Finley, Terry Hatcher. Ed Finley, Tamo Peniket. Lieutenant Drawatsky, Edward Witzke. Captain Price, Eric Brecker. BTK Killer, Jim Ralph. Susan, Victoria Bidewell. Stalker, Dustin McDougall. Dr. Mitchell, Mark Chavez. Faye, Candace Hunter. Dora, Allison Grace Klaus. Driver, Connor Stinson O'Gorman. Steve Vian, Cruz Joseph McKinnon. Shirley Vian, Gail Mackey. Officer, Moses Wamakoya. Young Ruth, Mia Simzer. Nurse, Tiana Marie Smith. Teenage Ruth, Misha Colorado. Cafe Manager, J.P. McGlynn. Farmer, Stu McLean. Patient, Paralee Cook. Marine, Ingrid Tetch. News Anchor, Sabrina Miniacci. Ruth's Bartender, Christopher Logan. Nancy Fox, Lisa Chandler. Marine State, Andrew Lissett. Male Shopper, Sheldon Landry. Stunt Coordinators, Chad Sain and Sean Orr. Associate Producers, Paralee Cook, Grant O'Kane, Tim Spence and Celeste Crow. Production Manager, Celeste Crow. Set Decorator, Terry Lynn Bell. On-Set Dresser, Alicia Wurzel. Props Master, Juan Pablo Gonzalez Amaya. Art Director, Andrew Talbot. Key Hairstylist, Selena Taylor. Key Makeup Artist, Kathleen Foulstone. Costume Designer, Jaden Devine. Transport Coordinator, Steve Rickman. Security Coordinator, Anthony Sabatini. Location Manager, Nigel Williams. Production Sound Mixer, Tad Nazar. Production Accountant, Paralee Cook. Production Coordinator, Carrie Croft. Special Effects Coordinator, Sammy Galley. Post-Production Supervisor, Tim Spence. Online Editor, Ron Penchalaya. Score Production Services, Allison Wright Clark. Post Audio Facilities provided by Maverick Post Group. Logos, UBCP, DGC. Logo, Creative BC. Copyright 2024 Housewife Productions. Logo, Johnson Production Group.